Welcome in, listeners, to another episode of the Busby Babe Podcast. I'm your host, Colin Dams, joined once again by Nathan Heinschel. And today we have a special guest on to preview the Tottenham match, Ryan Rosenblatt. Ryan, how's it going?
Hey, how are you guys doing?
We've been better. a feeling I'm sure you understand as well.
Yeah, I just have to go much further back to know what better felt like.
I don't know why everybody's so down. I snagged a PS5 today, so.
You don't have to brag, Nathan.
It's just a sick flex, bro.
But, Ryan, this is the first season for Tottenham post Jose Mourinho. For us, that was a weird era to process, and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was sort of an answer to that for us in terms of, bringing in positive vibes. Just to, get a check on how things are at Tottenham, how would you say things have been going since Jose Mourinho left the club?
I mean, when Jose got fired, they made Ryan Mason the caretaker, and it was abundantly clear that he doesn't know how to manage a football club. So that wasn't ideal. He was a feel-good guy because he played for the team and then was coaching a youth team and had been doing that for a couple years. So then he got to coach the first team for a couple months. That wasn't great. But then they hired Nuno. And if we've learned anything from the first 3 months of the Nuno era, it's that you can play the exact same football and just make you not want to watch as Jose. But if you do it while not being a giant asshole, people are generally be okay with it for a little bit. So, on the one hand, the football's bad. On the other hand, you don't have pure hate in your heart for what you're seeing. So there's that.
Yeah, I guess we experienced that a little bit with, Ole's sort of park the bus period against some of the bigger teams. But having a manager that you don't just totally despise and, not looking forward to every single press conference, that's a pretty big plus, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically all we got at this point, because to be honest, the actual coaching of the team is only mildly better than what we got with Jose, and it is equally turgid. So the football is bad. They are poorly coached. They do not have any idea of how to pass the ball forward. The star striker doesn't want to be there. There's not a lot great going on, but at least the manager is not just such a giant asshole that you hate everything about it. And honestly, that's what's carried us to the end of October. And you know what? That might actually carry us for another couple months. That is how bad it was.
Honestly, everything you just said is so relatable to what's happening at Manchester United.
Yeah. I'd take Harry Kane over Cristiano Ronaldo at this point, though.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there's quite a big difference between guy who, reasonably wants to go play for a club that has a better chance of winning things and Cristiano Ronaldo, being a bad human being. So at least we got that going for us.
Yeah.
If we set both the bar at the floor, we can clear it.
Would you say that that situation with Harry Kane maybe affected the managerial search in the summer? Because I know Tottenham had probably four or five names going at one point, and even, potentially a deal agreed with another manager. But when, one of the better players at putting the ball in the net in the world wants to leave the club, I imagine that's not a great situation to walk into.
I don't think it affected the search very much. I think it was parallel to the search in the sense that they both reflect the same issue. Daniel Levy has run the football club very poorly for a couple years now, and he continues to run the club very poorly. And the manager search was a disaster because he had no idea what he wanted and changed his mind about six different times. I mean, if you go back to the beginning of it, they started with they could get Potter, they could get Ten Hag, they could even get Rangnick. All of them would be good managers. Like, Ten Hag is lighting it up with Ajax this year after doing a good job. Potter is at least an intriguing manager who has Brighton playing well above what they should. And Rangnick has done a good job for a long time. If they hire any of those managers, within the first, I don't know, at some point in June, everybody's saying they're going, oh, they did a good job. That's a good hire. And that's where it was trending until he decided, actually, he didn't want to do that because he was going to have a dalliance with Conte and then a dalliance with Pochettino. And then he decides to bring in Paratici as a sporting director after already going through 90% of a managerial search and then restarting the whole thing over again with him to hire Gattuso, who got turned back because the fans said, no, we don't want a racist, sexist, homophobe running the club. And then maybe Fonseca. And then honestly, I think they ended up with Nuno just because Levy was needed somebody in so that way he would stop showing his ass. Like, that is the extent of it. And similarly, I mean, let's be blunt about it. Tottenham should have sold Harry Kane. Manchester City, whatever number they were offering, offered a lot of money, and his timeline and what he wants doesn't line up with the rest of the squad. The rest of the squad is built really well to press. Harry Kane is not going to press at this point in his career. So none of it makes sense, but it goes back to the same issue. And Daniel Levy doesn't understand how to run both of them because he's been stuck in this issue where he thinks Tottenham are a big club. Now we have a big stadium, we have more money, and he is trying to run the club like a big club. And so that's why he goes and hires a Jose Mourinho, because that's what a big club would do. And that's why he doesn't sell Harry Kane, because a big club wouldn't sell Harry Kane. Meanwhile, the team is losing because he's obsessed with trying to look like a big club instead of, you know, running the club well. And if you win, you're a big club. So I think they run a parallel path where it's just pure mismanagement from Daniel Levy all the way down. And that is, you can see it in pretty much everything that the club does.
I mean, like Nathan said earlier, in terms of relatable with Jose Mourinho, I think that had me thinking of Ed Woodward right there. you know, just disorder in terms of long-term planning, as well as, you know, finding somebody to be the face of all of that. It's, you know, not something our club has been that great at as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think the big difference is for 15 plus years, Daniel Levy, I think, was unquestionably the best chairman in the Premier League. Like, what he did at Tottenham to get them to this level was astounding. The problem is he did an incredible job turning Tottenham into a big club. And now that Tottenham is a big club, he has no idea how to run a big club. He's running around like, is this what a big club does? Is this what a big club does? Instead of, you know, running the club.
Oh. What was your read on the situation when the Pochettino era was coming to an end? Were you beginning to lean a little bit Poch out, or were you thinking that he's somebody who had earned more time than what he was given in that season, you know, being sacked only 2 or 3 months into it?
So, I mean, I think that actually goes back to a Daniel Levy issue. And if you remember the 2 summers before he got fired, Tottenham signed nobody. Not a single player. The only team in the league that did not sign anyone. And this is while Pochettino was telling Levy and telling the club, we need to turn over this squad. Like, you're even not that we don't have good players, but the squad will get stale and you need to keep getting new players in and improving it and getting new personalities in. And they didn't do that for a number of reasons. But as a result, I think that it made the last full season that he had there, just really arduous. And it was incredible the way that we went to the Champions League final. It's more incredible considering that Moussa Dembele was first hurt and then sold in January because his contract was up. And there was no semblance of a midfield left. I mean, it was Harry Winks and Moussa Sissoko went to a Champions League final. Like, that is the midfield that got to a Champions League final. That's the most absurd thing I've ever seen in my entire life. And Pochettino is a wizard for making it work. But they finished the season poorly in the league. They were scraping by on miracles in the Champions League. And I think you could see it was wearing on everybody. It was wearing on Pochettino. It was wearing on the key players. It was wearing on everyone. And so by the time the final happened and it ended, I think Poch was worn out. He was just burnt out. And a lot of the players were burnt out. And they didn't want to deal with Poch yelling at them all the time. Because they'd been the same guys he'd been telling to work so hard for 5 years at that point. That is a point where having new blood in there changes the dynamic of the team. They haven't been doing it for 5 years. When you have the same guy telling the same players the same thing for 5 years, that'll wear on you. When you have some of those players have only been there for a year, some just got there, it takes on a different dynamic. And so I think that by the time we got to November and by the time Poch was let go, it was understandable at that point to make that move because the team was so stuck in mud. Poch was just burnt out. The team was burnt out on him. That made sense. What bothers me about that is twofold. One, it didn't have to get to that point. It got to that point because Daniel Levy was unwilling to listen to his manager and make the changes that he should have made a year ago, 2 years ago. That was 2 years in motion and set up by the chairman. And then after that, you should have learned the lesson that, hey, Poch was right. And like, whatever, you made mistakes for 2 years as Daniel Levy. You didn't turn over the squad. You weren't willing to do what you had to do to manage it. And it all fell apart. And at that point, it was just too toxic. You got to let him go. Whatever. You get to that point, you've made your past mistakes. But that's where you go, okay, he was right, though. And now we need to start churning over that squad. We need to build a new identity. We need to do all these things that he basically said we should do. But we got to start it over. And instead, he has been trying to string out the same core for years with managers that have big names or will do a specific thing or to try and appease them. But there's still no new project. There's no vision. There's no idea. This is just Daniel Levy still trying to make Harry Kane and Son and Dele and Hugo work. Like, that's all it is like, well, we failed at this when we let Poch get burnt out and the players get burnt out on Poch. But what if we just keep running the play over and over again? Like, it's literally just it to pull a college football quote. They're just trying to run the dang ball. And they've ran the dang ball into the line of scrimmage 8 times in a row. But this 9th time, this is when it's going to work. And that's all Daniel Levy's doing. And so my frustration comes in the way it was managed in the run up to Poch and the reason he ended up getting fired and the fact that we just haven't learned from it. And I think you see that not just in the Jose and like, hey, Jose Mourinho is a big name, whatever. Like, Daniel Levy has been obsessed with him for 15 years. Like, you want to run it back with him and try one more time? Sure, go ahead and do it. But that clearly was a disaster. But we didn't learn from that either. And like, if you learn from that, you go and you hire a Ten Hag and you sell Harry Kane and you turn over the squad. But no, we're going to run it back one more time. And so you can make an argument he's learned a little bit because he brought Paratici in and he'll run a full football organization. I mean, maybe that'll happen at this point, but like, you're just, we ran the dang ball too many damn times.
It's kind of mind boggling to me too, that they didn't try and bring in a more offensive manager because, I mean, we talked about Harry Kane and how good he is still, you know, despite going into his 30s now, but also Son Heung-min, with the two of them, you have, you know, arguably one of the best Premier League attacking pairs of all time. And instead you're bringing in these managers that want to stack the defense with, and then a couple midfielders to try and move the ball forward to really provide them a limited number of chances each game.
Yeah. And I mean, the summer before Poch got fired, after that Champions League final, we finally bought again. The midfield had clearly broken down. Moussa Dembele had never been replaced really. So they went out and they bought Tanguy Ndombele and they bought Giovanni Lo Celso, two of the best ball progressing, possession based central young midfielders in the world, like widely regarded. We paid a lot of money for them too. Like, they didn't come cheap. Mm-hmm. They were really highly regarded and we paid for that because they were supposed to be very good. And then Poch gets fired a couple months later. And ever since then, we've had managers who don't like their central midfielders to pass the ball forward. Like, it makes no sense. Even when you look behind Harry Kane and Son Heung-min, you went out and you spent nearly £100 million on two central midfielders to be able to pass the ball forward and then keep hiring managers who don't believe in that. And I mean, you see it now with Nuno. He's obsessed with starting Højbjerg and Skip together. And this is not a knock on either of them as players, but neither one of them is going to progress the ball really well. Neither one of them is going to transition really well. You bought Ndombele and you bought Lo Celso for this reason. If they cannot play together, it's not because they're not good enough. It's because either you put the bad players around them or you're a bad manager. Like, that's what it is. And I think we're seeing the limitations of Nuno, who has a system that he likes to run, but it doesn't fit the personnel that the team has. And I think that this is kind of where you see the difference between a manager who can manage a mid-table or bottom half of the table team versus a higher team, is that the difference between a good player and an okay player when you're Wolves, when you're Southampton, when you're one of those teams, for the most part, there's not a huge difference there because you're not able to buy the top upper echelon talented players. So you can compromise on talent a little bit to find the player that will absolutely fit your system, and then your system takes precedence. But when you're Tottenham, when you're Manchester United, when you're anyone like that, not that Tottenham's in the same, you know, buying or talent power or equation of Manchester United, but once you get up there, the difference between Tonga and Ndombele and Oliver Skip is pretty damn big. Like, he's just a much better player. And that's where, as a manager, you need to be more versatile. You need to be able to do more things because you can't just make them play your system anymore. You have to make a system work for that talent. And I think that's where we're seeing the limitations of Nuno, who I think he can run a system really well, but you're going to have to sacrifice a lot on talent to run your system all the time at a Tottenham, at a Manchester United, because that means you're going to take your really good players and bench them.
It's interesting. I see Nathan smiling. This was kind of the conversation we had about Antonio Conte yesterday, with him being the manager really linked to us. And a lot of people on United Twitter are a fan of that idea because with Conte, you kind of know what you're going to get, as opposed to Solskjaer, who's more of supposedly an adaptable tactician. With Conte, you're going to give your team more shape and direction. But people kind of leave out the fact that a lot of the players that they think are going to start under Conte, or that they think are undroppable, are probably not going to fit the way that he wants to play.
Well, and if you want to use me as a reference to Nuno, I'm currently running Giovanni Lo Celso and Tonga and Ndombele in my midfield in FIFA, and it's going pretty well.
I mean, I think the difference with someone like Conte as opposed to Nuno is, I mean, he is more rigid than like a Solskjaer is, that's for sure. But like, we saw him at Chelsea, at Juve, there are certain principles he's not going to deviate from, but he's willing to play different players in different positions as long as it satisfies those principles. I mean, The teams that we saw him play at various teams, like, they don't run the exact same system. It's not square peg into a round hole situation. He's going to check off his systemic boxes, but beyond that, he'll find different ways to use different players. I mean, he took an Eden Hazard who definitely isn't fit a system. He's like, no, we can just build a thing around you. Like, let's build the plane out of Eden Hazard. And he tore apart the league. Like, that is a guy who's like, it's one thing to have systemic principles. It's a whole other thing to just have a system. And I think that's kind of where you see a difference between a Conte and a Nuno, or an Ole, who it doesn't have a system, and I'm not sure he has principles either.
Well, and that shift that you're talking about too, from like a lower echelon club or a mid-table club versus the big clubs too, when you're spending the kind of money that you are to bring in the players that you have on those clubs, you have to be more flexible because it's so much cheaper to replace the manager than it is to replace a squad of, you know, 11 world-class or whatever adjective you want to put on these players. They came in for a reason to these clubs. And as we're seeing with Manchester United and the things that we're, you know, mulling about as we talk about what manager might come in, or if we're going to stick with Solskjaer for the rest of the season, how much politics are being played into that, and how much power are the players going to have in those decisions? Because we run into the issue of, can you bench Ronaldo? Can you bench Pogba? Can you bench Marcus Rashford? Clearly you can bench Jadon Sancho, as we found out. So I think we are running, I feel like, pretty parallel right now in that sense, where it's like, I think you could bring in another manager at Tottenham right now, and I think that team would just be flying. But for whatever reason, they're just kind of, the inertia is not going in the direction that they want to right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think if Tottenham had hired a good manager, I think they would probably be favorites for fourth, considering United's issues. Now, that changes if, you know, you guys bring in Conte, that maybe flips and maybe we're favorites for fifth. But I mean, there's a big difference between favorites for fourth or fifth, as opposed to, you know, maybe we'll nip eighth, which is what Tottenham look like right now. And yeah, I mean, I think we are a manager away from that. And similarly, like I said, we may be favorites for fourth with a good manager. You guys hire Conte, you're favorites for fourth. Like, it turns real quick with the manager of that level. And I mean, I think for you guys, one of the benefits of being a Manchester United, where, one, I mean, yeah, you can't ostracize the whole team because you spent a lot of money on them, But like, you guys could get rid of one or two of the guys. And if you have an Antonio Conte who is that level of manager, so yeah, he can bench one or two players because he's going to win. And you guys can eat the however many million pounds on one player because you're going to win enough to make up for it. And then you're going to go buy some other guys who fit better. And the key isn't so much you got to make everyone work, but you got to make it, to me, it's more of, it's not that you got to find the system that works for everyone. You got to find the system that works best for the squad. And sometimes that is going to leave somebody out. Tottenham right now, we are not running what's best for the squad. We are kind of just adrift. And I think Conte at United, it wouldn't have that issue. It may not work for a Pogba. It may not work for Rashford. I mean, I'm just saying individual players here that like I could see them, one player being squeezed out, two being squeezed out. But I think it works for the majority pretty well.
So kind of bringing it into the context of this weekend with, you know, the knowledge that Solskjaer is going to stick around, you know, at least until the international break is what everyone is saying. How do you feel going into this game for Tottenham?
I mean, it's kind of a mix. I think we're probably both in similar situations where like I don't feel great about the team, but I mean, I can feel pretty crappy about the team and think that we might be able to beat United right now. Like that's just kind of how it is. So yeah. The question for me in kind of what that level of confidence is I think that we're starting to see kind of the benefits of a couple of our signings. I think Romero has played really well lately and Royale has played really well. And so those are our two summer signings who have really solidified the back line. And so I have some confidence in our ability to keep goals out if our midfield can, you know, hold the ball and move the ball. I'm just not sure they can do that. And if they don't do that and you let Ronaldo or Rashford or Bruno or one of your 78 really, really good players who can make something out of nothing, I mean, you let them have the ball in the final third enough, like we're going to lose. That's just kind of how it goes. And that's kind of where I could see the defense breaking down, as if the midfield just can't move the ball forward, which is a thing that happens to us often. I think you could easily press us out of the game. I'm also have no confidence that Ole, one, will think to do that, and two, will have drilled the team in training well enough that they could actually execute that even if he thought about it. So it's really a just two teams that I have no confidence in situation.
How are we feeling for the overall vibes, the overall watchability of the match when it's going to be Højbjerg and Skip going up against McFred in the midfield? Like, really a clash of titans.
I mean, I hope the physios do their stretching before the match.
Yeah, they're going to be running out there.
I mean, if there's two things that we're really bad at this season, and really under Solskjaer in general, it's been a problem. One, breaking down teams that sit back against us. Is like you said, we have a lot of individuals that can make something out of nothing, but too often that seems like our only plan in attack is, you know, Bruno Fernandes and Marcus Rashford are going to link up at some point. And then, you know, as was on full display the last two games, really against Leicester as well, our midfield is so easy to pass through right now. And that's put so much pressure on our back line that is struggling for confidence already. And, you know, with Harry Maguire coming back, he had that awful game against Leicester where they were chanting his name and he hasn't really looked the same since. You know, it might only take one or two breakaway chances for Kane and Son to get something against us.
Yeah, I just don't know what happens when you have a Tottenham team that has no idea how to move the ball forward against a United team that just begs you to move the ball forward. Like, I don't know who's going to win that midfield battle. I don't know if you can call it a battle. I don't know if you could. I don't know who's going to win that midfield lay down and roll over.
This is an interesting conversation that we're having because I feel like we're both so pessimistic about our teams. Like you express your frustrations with Nuno, whereas I think from Colin and I's perspective, I don't want to put words in your mouth, Colin. I'm certainly a little nervous because we saw Nuno at Wolves. That team really did a good job of canceling out the things that Manchester United did well. And those games were horrendous to watch for a neutral. I don't know why you'd ever watch a game where Nuno's coaching against Manchester United. It's gross.
It wasn't so just that. It's like we played 10 times over the span of like 3 years.
Yeah.
We just kept drawing.
I mean, the only thing I'm taking solace in right now is at least we don't have Ruben Neves, who's going to hit a 25-yarder from outside the box against us. But, you know, it gives me cause for pause when I'm trying to find some confidence in this match because, one, United's not playing well. And, two, I do think Nuno has the discipline to get that team ready to go to cancel out the things that United would try and do that they potentially could be successful in. We haven't seen necessarily, you know, Bruno's first game was against Wolves, and we're looking at like, oh, is this guy the savior? Because that game was tough to watch. That was that 0-0, I believe. His first ever game with United, like it was bad.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's kind of illustrative though of the issues that Nuno's had at Tottenham. And I mean, those Wolves teams, like the things that he was built upon was he had wingers who would move the ball forward. And so they could defend in numbers. Wingers would fly forward and dribble it forward. And then all of a sudden they had overloads where they can find a Ruben Neves where you can't close it down. They can find a cross. You have Raul Jimenez in front. The problem is, like, Tottenham doesn't have Adama Traore. They don't have an entire team that's built around wingbacks or wingers to just like get forward. Instead, they have, you know, like Giovanni Lo Celso and Tanguy Ndombele and Son, and like they're very good players, but instead Lucas plays every game, and the only way to move the ball forward is get the ball to Lucas and ask him to dribble forward. And I think that kind of hits at the clash that Tottenham's had in the frustration is that Nuno's so stuck to his system where the wing has to move the ball forward that Lucas has become the most important player on the team and the guy who has to move the ball forward. If you look at the talent on that team, that doesn't seem like a great use of talent, but that's what fits his system. So if Nuno did that against United before, but that's when he had the players who were built to play that way. He doesn't have the players who are built to play that way, which means either he's kind of playing in a way he doesn't want to play. And you kind of see that one foot in, one foot out issue that Tottenham's had in some of these games, which doesn't lead to great results. Or you watch them try and execute something similar to what they would execute at Wolves, but with the personnel that doesn't lend itself to it. So, like, I think if Tottenham could put together something similar to the performances that Nuno put together at Wolves against United, like, I totally see how that would shut down United and lead to a not very good game where Harry Kane or Son score a couple goals and we win 2-0. But I just have no confidence in their ability to, you know, do that because the personnel isn't there. Instead, they have good players.
What are your concerns, Colin? Because the way the back line's playing right now, I think they are begging to provide Tottenham an exciting afternoon, especially with Harry Kane's clearly not fit. He came back way too soon. He looks sluggish.
You mean Harry Maguire?
Harry Maguire, excuse me. Sorry, my bad, Harry Kane. I got my Harrys mixed up. And, you know, against Liverpool, like we saw that just dumbfounding play where Luke Shaw is running into Harry Maguire. And it's like, so I don't even know if they understand what spacing is anymore. And then Aaron Wan-Bissaka, for the most part, is pretty good. But you give Son enough bites at the apple, he's gonna find a way past him. Especially if Wan-Bissaka finds himself pushing too far up because he's trying to cover for Greenwood, and then all of a sudden it's Lindelof on, you know, Son. That definitely makes me nervous. So what are you thinking when it comes to – certainly Tottenham has talented attacking players, and the defense doesn't look great. So what are you thinking, Colin?
I mean, positional awareness and – you know, taking responsibility in defending in transition has been a huge issue for us the last few games. And that's not just because of the midfield, it's because the defense, and at times last season, this was a problem as well when we just lost our heads, especially the RB Leipzig game that cost us a spot in the Champions League knockout. You know, people got to be in communication with each other when they're tracking back and, you know, the other team can't look up and just move the ball from, you know, the center circle to your own 6-yard box in 5 seconds, because, you know, if you keep giving them chances like that, you know, bad things are going to happen. I want to credit Guardian Football Weekly podcast, because I'm going to use this idea that they talked about. They compared when Frank Lampard was sacked to Tuchel's first game, positional awareness was something that Chelsea fixed basically within a week. So it's something that is doable if you realize that it's a problem, and, you know, maybe it'll lead to some boring football at first, but at least you won't get torched on the counterattack. And, you know, just understanding who you're supposed to mark and who you're supposed to be in communication with and who's overlapping and all that, you know, maybe is something that we can just nail down and, you know, hunker down for not leaking any goals against Tottenham, you know, a team that doesn't score that much anyway. I think that's a really doable task. So I think defense has to be priority, especially if Solskjaer sees this as an opportunity to try and keep his job beyond these next couple of games. Which sure it is.
I mean, I think, again, like, you're kind of, we're running into kind of the two immovable objects issue. And like you talk about Son against Wan-Bissaka. We have no reason to think that Son will be going against Wan-Bissaka because he spent much of the season functionally playing as a midfielder. And so, like, again, we're running into the issue. Like, yeah, I mean, if you can tell me that Harry Kane and Son are going to get chances against the United back line, I feel great. But like, Son is functionally a midfielder at this point because that is the only way that Nuno can figure out how to. They're like, well, Son, you can move the ball forward. That's basically what it's been. And so, I mean, this is where I say, like, it comes down to which midfield can function in some form. Because, yeah, like, I agree that I feel great about going at the United defense, assuming, you know, we can give our players a chance to do that. I'm not sure they're going to get the chance. And so, like, that's kind of where I'm just like, yeah, like, I think everything you guys are saying makes total sense about kind of what worries are. I'm just not entirely confident that Tottenham could actually make that happen, despite it seeming not especially difficult considering the players at hand.
So, Ryan, what are your thoughts on Solskjaer, I guess, kind of in general, before even the chaos of this week? And how do you think this week has impacted his tenure at Manchester United?
I mean, I was never a believer, so I guess that kind of, like, we start there. Like, I thought it was hilarious that you guys hired him in the first place. Like, there was never a point where I thought that this Manchester United team was building anything that looked like a coherent system and plan forward befitting Manchester United. Like, I've been in awe that he got hired, that he had the support, that he's kept the job. And I think that, you know, getting whooped by Liverpool definitely makes it look a lot worse. I don't think he's as bad as that, but I also don't think he was as good as his highs. I think he's kind of been the same manager that he's always been. And I think the comparison to Frank Lampard makes a lot of sense, because I thought the same thing about Frank Lampard. And in no world were either of those men, you know, qualified to manage the teams that they did. And that's not to say that they couldn't be one day, but at the time they were hired, they sure as hell weren't. And I don't think that Manchester United or Chelsea is a place where you're going to walk in and learn on the job and in 5 years be brilliant. Like, that doesn't make sense either. So, I mean, I think that if you look at Ole's entire kind of tenure at Manchester United, you see a guy who probably shouldn't have had the job to begin with, who reached higher highs than he probably should have, because the talent there is really good. And if you give a lot of, you know, really talented players good vibes, it's going to work out sometimes. And also, the talent, as good as it is, isn't the most seamlessly fit talent, because the squad building hasn't been coherent. And that's going to expose someone like Ole to look worse than he actually is, like we saw against Liverpool. So I think you've kind of just seen a totally cromulent manager for a team not nearly as good as Manchester United kind of be exposed as such, while also at the same time kind of exposing the club's flaws that have existed for long before he got there.
Yeah. We've been longtime defenders of him until, you know, the last couple of weeks where, and really, and this is where we differ from a lot of Manchester United fans, a turning point for Nathan and I and our other co-host who isn't joining us was the Cristiano Ronaldo signing, because it seemed like this final buy-in to the transformation of Manchester United into like an Amazon.com that sells Manchester United nostalgia, as opposed to a functional football club that has direction and is building towards something. And
the mileage I'm getting out of that Rick and Morty clip is just unbelievable.
Yeah. Come home to the taste of Simple Ricks. Yeah.
I mean, if I mean, you guys clearly are done with Ole, but you did defend, like, what do you think there's a difference between Ole the manager now versus Ole the manager, let's say, last April?
This was a question that Mark Kastner asked us as well before the Liverpool game, was or something along those lines. And I think in hindsight, I was probably wrong about Ollie a lot of the time in defending him. But I still think up through the end of last season, there was something in place that looked like it was building towards something. And he went after the wrong pieces this summer to continue that project. And bringing in Cristiano Ronaldo heightened the expectations to and focus to, you know, a whole new level on him and the job that he was doing. And all the problems that weren't addressed in the summer are, you know, the very problems that are creating all of the, you know, bad results now.
Yeah, I think where my hang up has been is it, there was always signs where United would play really well or they'd set up really well in a major game, you know, and then there'd always be a game where it just seemed like everybody turned their brains off and that they'd have a stinker. And it usually happened. All of these, both sides of it seem to happen in the Champions League, because for every Liverpool 5-0 game that we have, or the Besiktas game from last year, we have Paris. We have some games against Manchester City. Like it seemed like it was always in Ollie's locker where he could unlock a good performance out of the guys when the match really mattered. And, you know, you could have that siege mentality, really, you know, pack it in, kill them on the break because you've got these incredibly fast wingers. But when the results weren't going their way, I think compounded with the things that happened over the summer. And it feels like the things that happened over the summer with the transfers even exacerbated more some of the tactical flaws in the system, because when Ollie needs everybody all pushing in one direction and you've got a player who sits at the top and doesn't track back, doesn't press, doesn't play defense, and then you have a player on the right side who then mimics that person in the center, all of a sudden you have 8 outfield players, you know, playing against 10. And it was shown a little, it was a canary in the coal mine against Atalanta, and then it just blew open against Liverpool. So I think that's the issue that we're running into, because all reports suggest that Ollie has had some kind of say, or I don't know if he necessarily has had the final say on everything, but his opinion has been taken into account. And when you are saying for all this time that you were building, you know, we want to get back to Manchester United of old, and we want to promote the youth, and we want to play, you know, fast, free flowing football. I want to bring it back to 2007, 2008. I want to have this kind of amorphous attacking system where you don't know where the ball is going to be coming from, but we're going to kill you on the break and things like that. And then you quite literally try to take it back to 2007, 2008 by bringing in one of the players from that team. I think that's where you really just kind of, there's too many contradictions. I think that's where that's really been the straw that's broke the camel's back. And so when the results don't go our way, and they're consistently not going our way, all of a sudden it really feels like the deficiencies are not something that's going to be overcome at this point. I think that whether or not he's somebody that you could bring in as some kind of director of football ambassador, whatever, you know, placeholder position that you want to use, clearly, Ollie has done a lot of good. And unfortunately, and that was a big conversation from yesterday, is that we're afraid that if this continues on in the path that it's going right now, it's going to undo all of the positive things that he did impart on the club in the last couple of years. So I think it's almost to the benefit to his legacy and kind of what's going to happen next is, you know, for him to not be a part of it, which is a bummer, because I think at the end of the day, like him as a guy, as a dude. So not to use like a George Bush phrase or anything, just like Ollie's a guy I'd like to have a beer with. Like, he looks like he's got a good sense of humor, you know. But yeah, it's just not going his way, and it's getting to the point now where I just think that it's out of his control that he's going to lose his dream job, but I think it's too toxic for him to stay too, which is sad.
I think there's a lot of similarities between him and Arteta, in that both, and the slight difference I think is that there is a very clear project happening at Arsenal, between Arteta and Edu, where they clearly have a vision for how they want to build this club and the squad and blah, blah. But I think that there is a lot of similarity here, at least, from my point of view, where I didn't think either was a good hire. And I think that there was enough there to talk yourself into it. And they're former players who were beloved, and the clubs wanted them there. The fans wanted them there because they loved the guy, which, I mean, no shade there. Like, I'm willing to forgive a lot of stuff for some guys who brought me a lot of joy when they played for the club. But I think that they were playing on that a lot. And despite the fact that it was unlikely to succeed, there was enough there to believe that they could succeed. And for a few years there, and I think we're seeing this honestly still playing out with Arteta, is that if you believed in the hire to begin with, they gave you just enough to keep believing in the hire and to like, hey, this was the direction that we decided to go when we hired him. We can still make this work. We're still kind of along this track. It may not be exactly what we want yet, but he's given us enough to believe in the same thing that we believed when we hired him. Similarly, if you did not believe in the hire, they were giving you just enough to believe that you were right when they got hired, that it was a bad hire. And they've kind of just strung you along in kind of that middle ground long enough where the people who never believed in it have plenty of reason to say, look, I was right. And the people who did believe in it were given just enough to say, look, I was right. And then at some point, as someone who did not believe in either hire, I think Arteta is going to come crashing down the same way that Ole is crashing down now. But I mean, there are a lot of parallels there to me, both in kind of their stature in the club and where they came in. And for how a few years there, they kind of just straddled that line of making both the believers and the non-believers believe exactly what they thought when he got hired.
Yeah, I think it definitely has made a difference that from the start, I wanted him to be the guy that turned everything around. And that he, you know, 99% sure that he is not the guy now that is going to turn things around. It is kind of hard to accept because, you know, for a club that has gone from Sir Alex Ferguson to the last 8 years, I'm just really tired of new managers, man. Like,
yeah. It's just... Well, that's to your point too. Like, Ollie hasn't been an asshole, and we had Jose Mourinho. So in a lot of ways it was like, man, this is just nice. And I don't have to worry about Jose Mourinho.
Yeah.
Ollie's a chill dude. And you know, we were 3 years ago wondering if Conte was going to be our manager. And I was like, man, are we really going to go from Mourinho to Conte? I mean, that is just fire and brimstone. But I guess it worked for Chelsea. But, you know, Conte didn't last very long there either. So it certainly feels like whenever we swap out Ollie, we're going to be doing this again in 2-3 years again. So yeah, that's the frustrating part.
Yeah, but I mean, I look at him like, while I never believed him, like, you went from sixth place to third place to second. Like, he gave you enough to believe. Like, you can sit there and say, and like clearly I did, like, hey, he doesn't have it. Here are the flaws with it. And like, he's kind of coasting on whatever talent. But like, you went from sixth to third to second. Like, that's finishing second place in the Premier League, not a joke. Like, that requires a lot of winning. And like, it's kind of hard to tell someone who wants a manager to work. And there's enough there to believe in it that, hey, we just finished second in the Premier League. He's shit. I mean, I believe that, but like, that's not the easiest sell to someone. Like, he gave you real reason to believe. Like, that's where I say it's like, it's not like, listen, like, it happened 20 minutes ago. Ronald Koeman got fired by Barcelona. He never gave them reason to believe. Like that was just a bad hire that went bad because it was bad. Like, Ole, while I think it was a bad hire, like, if you wanted to believe in Ole, he gave you plenty of reason to believe in Ole. Like, I don't think that's an absurd, like, I think that's kind of the difference there is, like, I could call it a bad hire, but it's not as if it was an implosion and a disaster from the start. Like, he did some real things.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's just hard to say goodbye, man.
Well, at least you didn't have to fire your dad the way that we do with Pochettino.
Yeah. Speaking of, do you think there's a Man United Tottenham sweepstakes for Pochettino by the end of the season?
I mean, I hope you guys aren't smart enough to hire him. I mean, I like it's been like I was really happy he went to PSG. Like as soon as we fired him, I was just like, he's always made sense at United. I always thought that if you guys were smart, you would hire him. And but you know, he played at PSG. He loves Paris, loves Paris, keeps a home there. I was like, you guys just like, I don't really care. Just fire your manager. So that way Pochettino could go to PSG and like, that's fine. I can root for him there. Like we don't have to go up against him. That was always my dream. And when it happened, I'm like, great. I can just love my dad at a distance. And that's great. And like, if you guys hire him, it's going to hurt me so much.
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of surprised by how PSG has gone. You know, our friend Polly broke it down a little bit for us yesterday about having the three forwards that he does and trying to run a pressing system is maybe not the best idea. But I mean, there's just something about having Messi, Neymar and Mbappe that you think might paper over the cracks of everything else in the squad.
Yeah. I mean, it's a combination of like literally like having three guys on the team that aren't going to defend, I think just like violates Pochettino to his soul. So he refuses to give in. But also like, look at the number of good managers who have failed at PSG. Like, I don't know what's going on there, but there has to be something where like there is an institutional issue there beyond. And that's not to say that Pochettino hasn't done anything wrong. I mean, he probably has. And, you know, at some point you probably should give up your dream that like all 11 players work for each other because, you know, you have the best front line arguably ever. But I also just can't get over the fact that I'm like, yeah, everyone thought Tuchel sucked too, and then he left PSG, and now look at him. Like, there's PSG just has such a long line of something going wrong for good managers who succeed elsewhere that I'm just like, I think it might be a PSG problem.
Yeah, it feels like often it is just a finding the right piece to fit the, you know, the place that they're going to, because I mean, Unai Emery failed at both PSG and Arsenal. And, you know, now that he's back in Spain, he's winning trophies again, you know?
Yeah. But I mean, similarly, like, I mean, it'd be a little bit different. It'd be fascinating if Pochettino ended up at United, despite the fact that I think it would succeed long term. I mean, imagine him walking in and telling Ronaldo he has to go press their left back every single time he touches the ball in a certain spot. Like, that would be entertaining for me to watch, and I don't think it would go especially well. But then again, you have Jadon Sancho, who would probably light it up under him. So I think it would be similar to the way that like Sterling was the perfect player for Pep. I think Sancho would be the perfect player for Pochettino. So it would be an interesting transition phase, but I think it would be wildly successful.
I'll take whatever manager will play Jadon Sancho.
Just
because right now we got Jason Sanchez.
That's all we want.
Bro, I would honestly take. I mean, yeah, that would be the ideal three there. But I mean, Rashford, Sancho, and Cavani, I think, would be more exciting than whatever the hell is happening right now.
Yeah.
So
for a lot of like reasons,
Cavani. He's a fun cult hero. Plus, he got great hair. You know, flows. It's nice.
Yeah. Well, Ryan, thank you so much for joining us and for taking the time. And hopefully the match is more entertaining than what we've built it up to be.
Hey, listen, I'm not saying it won't be entertaining. I just don't think it's going to be especially high-level soccer, but low-level soccer can be thrilling. So I'm just hoping for, you know, I just wanted to open up. If it opens up, I'll have a good time with it.
Yeah, see what it's like for an Ollie and Nuno team to actually, you know, cover some ground against each other.
There's a first time for everything.
Yeah. All right, listeners, we'll be back next week. We're trying to get somebody in to talk about Manchester City, but depending on how this weekend goes, we may want to end the run of having rival fans on to talk to us about Manchester United. So, yeah, thanks for listening.